going to talk about a specification technology called abstract state machines that we are using as a formal semantic foundation in modeling and simulation. Likely scenarios of offender movement patterns and target choices in continuously changing urban surroundings. In the first half of my talk, roughly, I'll try to motivate the use of this specification technology and then go into the application side and present some results of our work and where we currently are. Abstract state machines over the past 15 years or so have been used extensively for rigorous modeling and analysis of complex computational systems. They provide a constructive approach for requirements analysis, design specification, experimental validation, formal verification where appropriate, and are known for their versatility in modeling all kinds of algorithms, architectures, computer languages, protocols, virtually all kinds of discrete dynamic systems. Many of the most common programming languages have been given a formal semantic foundation based on abstract state machines, like, for instance, Java and the Java Virtual Machine are formally defined in terms of abstract state machines. There are a number of international industrial standards where this method has been used and in many other applications. And much of this work is documented in materials that are available from the ASM Research Center. That's a virtual research center with research groups spread all over Europe and North America. My personal background is so I'm coming from software technology and formal methods, and my experience is in modeling complex distributed systems, originally things like communication software, web service architectures, all kinds of system design languages, and then more recently shifted the focus on things outside of this, what's usually considered the natural habitat of abstract state machines, looking at other kinds of discrete dynamic systems, in particular in computational criminology, but we also did some work with aviation security and on intelligent systems, and most of this work was inspired by PET, so I should give her proper credit for this, and we have a very nice collaboration going on at Simon Fraser University. In most of, if not all of these applications, it's often highly desirable to have executable models even at a fairly high level of abstraction, which typically means in an early phase of system development and design, so that one can explore the behavior of the models before one actually builds the system. And in order to do this, we have another stream of research and development going on where we have developed our own executable language for abstract state machines. This is called Core ASM. It's an open source software development project, and Core ASM focuses on the early phases of the system design process, emphasizing freedom for experimentation, and the evolutionary nature of design being a creative activity. So in developing such models, one does many, many iterations until one eventually is satisfied with such a model. And the Core ASM language is designed in such a way that one can focus on the peak of the problem space, on concentrate on semantic aspects rather than on the encoding of of a model in a particular syntactic framework given by other specification languages or by implementation languages, which one may eventually want to do by refining the model in order to gain more efficiency if this is important. I don't want to go too deep into this here. So this language comes together with a tool environment which allows to develop core ASM models, simulate those models, and we are also integrating verification tools into this environment so that we can do model checking, for instance. But overall, what one should note here is that in the early phase of the software design or system design process in a more general setting, it's all about getting the requirements right before actually building the system. And to show you that this is a problem, let me give you a very simple real-world example. So what we are seeing here is the system, how the customer explained it, how the project leader understood it, how the analyst designed it, well, he kind of got the point here, how the programmer wrote it, how the business consultant described it, how the project was documented, this is fairly typical, what operations installed, how the customer was built, how it was supported, and what the customer really needed. Now, more seriously, this leads us to an interesting question. How can one cope with the notorious problem of establishing the correctness and completeness of abstract functional requirements in the design of discrete dynamic systems prior to actually building the system, prior to produce miles of code, just to find out that this was not the behavior we have expected? And there were misunderstandings about most fundamental requirements, or we just missed something. So we need a more systematic approach to make this work. And the idea here is, well, maybe it's possible to come up with an abstract machine model so that we can explain the behavior of a system under study. By behavior, I mean the observable behavior of such a system, in terms of possible runs or executions or computations of this machine model, so that we have a systematic way of analyzing those runs and validating them. And, you know, in computer science, having an abstract machine model is as good as it gets. And computer scientists are pretty good at analyzing such things. They have all kinds of methods and tools for doing this. So describing the behavior of a system in abstract computational terms means to develop an algorithm. Algorithm here has a very broad meaning. Algorithm here means some kind of description that's systematic and that allows us to describe the behavior of any such system that we may want to consider at any desired level of abstraction. And that leads to the question, can any algorithm, never mind how abstract, be modeled by a generalized machine very closely and faithfully? Well, if we stick to one abstract level, abstracting from low-level details and being oblivious to a possibly higher-level picture, and if the states of the algorithm reflect all the pertinent information, then a particular small instruction set actually suffices in all cases. So this was a particular fundamental observation by Yuri Gurevich, who then developed, based on this observation, the concept of abstract state machines. And there are basically three computational models, a sequential one, a parallel one, and a distributed one, which is based on an asynchronous computation model and provides a generalization of the two other models. Now, what we are interested here in the context of modeling crime is the distributed ASM model, the most general one. In principle, the idea of having such a machine model is not all that new, because already in 1936, Alonzo Church and Alan Turing have developed models to show that every intuitively computable function can be calculated by an effective or mechanical method not demanding any insight or ingenuity. This Alan Turing's version later became known as the famous Turing machines, which since that time have been widely used in the theory of computation in computer science. So this is what all the students in computer science study in their first years. Now, meanwhile, it's in the theory of computation widely accepted that any algorithm can be simulated by a Turing machine with only a polynomial slowdown. That in principle means that an algorithm can be given a precise meaning, a precise semantics, by describing it in terms of a Turing machine that would simulate this algorithm. On the other hand, this for the theory of computation and computability is a pretty interesting result, but for the purpose of describing the semantics of something, polynomial slowdown may mean that in order to simulate one step of a fairly abstract algorithm, this poor Turing machine may have to do many steps, even hundreds, even thousands of steps. So it's totally useless, in general, to have such a model to describe the meaning of an algorithm. Now, this is... Oops, that's too fast. So taking this into account, the question then is, can one generalize the Turing machine model so that any algorithm, never mind how abstract, can be modeled by a generalized machine very closely and faithfully, meaning at a natural, in a natural way, so that one step in the algorithm basically can be described by one step in the abstract of the abstract machine model. And indeed, this is what ASMs provide. So there was actually, a long time ago, the ASM thesis. I should probably mention that originally ASMs were, the original name were evolving algebras, and this name turned out to be not terribly helpful when we tried to solve this specification technology to engineers in industry, say, or because algebra was already frightening them. So, indeed. The ASM thesis was that ASMs provide such a model to a uniform framework, a universally applicable framework to describe the meaning of algorithms. And meanwhile, there is a formal proof that this works for sequential algorithms. So the sequential model of ASMs captures the meaning of sequential algorithms, and same thing for parallel algorithms. There is no such result that for distributed ASMs and distributed algorithms, but based on considerable empirical evidence, one can expect that this will come sooner or later. So with this in mind, what is an abstract state machine? And please bear with me, I won't go too much into technical details, and three more slides and we are back to criminology. It's essentially, it's a virtual machine that combines two fundamental abstraction principles, the one thing is the use of first order structure for the representation of states in this machine model. First order structures are well known in mathematical logic, and since they were introduced by Tarski in the 1930s, they are widely considered as uniform and universally applicable means for describing any kind of static mathematical reality. On the other hand, in computer science, state transition systems are probably the most common framework for describing dynamic properties in the computation of discrete dynamic systems, like how states evolve as we go through a computation of such a system. So it seems natural to combine these two very established abstraction principles and form one computation model on this basis. What's amazing here is that it turned out then, and that was the probably major contribution by Gurevich, that actually a fairly small instruction set, and what you see here, I won't go into details, are five instructions. One sometimes needs just one additional in order to deal with certain dynamic situations. But this is enough. These five or six instructions are enough to describe, for instance, all the programming languages that we have with all the many instructions. You can always boil it down to this here and describe the meaning of those instructions in terms of these few statements in abstract state machines, in an abstract state machine. A computation then is considered to be an evolution of the state where one starts in one well-defined initial state that's described in terms of such a first-order structure. And in every computation step or move that the system does, it evaluates the program over the given state and then computes a so-called update set, which specifies what changes are to be made to the given state in order to produce the next state. Then it fires all the updates in the update set, making them effective, and produces a next state in one atomic step. So all the updates are fired simultaneously. And in this way, we move from state to state, and such a run can be finite or infinite, depending on the nature of the system that we want to describe. Now, for sequential ASMs, having much more time, I could probably explain to all of you and convince you that this really works, that the formalization of the notion of sequential algorithm in terms of sequential abstract state machines indeed works, and it's based on three simple postulates called sequential time, abstract state, and bounded exploration, but I don't want to go really into this. Now, for parallel abstract state machines and parallel algorithms, that's more sophisticated, and as one can imagine, when it comes to dealing with concurrency, it gets even more tricky. But in principle, it can be done, and distributed ASMs, that's the model we are using all the time. So this model is based on an asynchronous computation model where we have any number of autonomously operating ASM agents where each of these agents represents a concurrent control thread in a distributed computation of some system. Those agents interact with each other and the external environment by reading and writing shared locations, by reading and writing locations of globally shared states. And now the moves or computation steps of these agents then are concurrent, and so one needs a way of resolving any kind of potential conflicts, interference that may occur, and this is done by the underlying semantic model based on the definition of so-called partially ordered runs, the use of partial orders in dealing with the meaning of concurrency is also a pretty common concept. I don't want to go further into this, but in fact, the only somewhat more challenging part is really the definition of what partially ordered runs means and why this is a natural underlying semantics for all kinds of distributed systems. Now back to terminology. Some of you may have seen some of the following slides before, so I apologize for that, but I hope there will also be something new to show. Again, the idea is that we intend with the mastermind model to develop a computational framework for modeling and simulation of spatio-temporal characteristics of physical crimes in urban environments, where we have a number of agents representing persons, for instance, offenders moving about the urban environment, and based on their daily life routines, and I think I don't have to convince you here that crime is not random after this week, I think we all are convinced. So there are definite patterns and rules that govern the working of a social system. In our case, we consider one composed of criminals, victims, targets, interacting with each other within the urban environment, and also interacting with their environment. The purpose of modeling and simulation here is kind of threefold. One aspect is that we would like to provide support for crime analysis reduction and prevention by developing such a framework and tools that one can then build in a more systematic and more reliable way based on such a framework. That we would like to support a systematic integration of established theories of crime and provide the development, support the development of tools for reasoning about most likely scenarios, dealing with what if situations. So basically this goes into the direction of decision support systems. Now the scope of our model is any number of agents living in a virtual city, where agents represent persons commuting between homework and recreation locations. A person may be an offender, a victim, could also be a cop or security personnel. Basically what we are doing here is combining the multi-agent system-based modeling view, which seems to be the most common one in modeling of social systems, with the abstract state machine view, where we also have agents and then match those agents one-to-one in the two models. In comparison to the agent-based modeling approach we saw yesterday, presented by Igor, the last talk yesterday, there is no drinking in this model because all agents are driving. And the goal of our work is to provide a coherent and consistent semantic framework which allows to systematically develop computation models for discrete event simulation, and systematic and well-defined integration and validation of patterns and theories of crime. Now, the particular challenge seems to be that there is a multitude of views that one actually has to take into account, and we saw this in the many presentations here in the workshop. So the question is there any framework so that we could possibly hope to combine all the views in one common uniform representation. It's questionable whether this is possible, but I think the best we can do, try to use one that's as universal as possible as a core for defining such a computational framework, and this is where we use abstract state machines, and then try to integrate systematically all the aspects that one can integrate here. And this picture is not meant to be comprehensive, it's just an example, but certainly very important to integrate the criminology view, multi-agent systems, navigation, how persons navigate through an environment, aspects of artificial intelligence and artificial life, like knowledge representation, decision making, and learning are very important. And there are much more, you name it. And the challenge really is to introduce a way of computational thinking in all these disciplines where this is not naturally the first way one would look at how to solve such a problem here. And we find it's very important that one has a proper semantic foundation based on discrete mathematics and computational logic, which allows us to more systematically validate by analytical means or interactively by using computational tools whether the models that we build are coherent and consistent, and also analyze various properties of such models as we do simulations and so on. Now what we basically try to do here is compute what's called in an experiment a mental map. In this case, it's one of Amsterdam, and I'm sure some of you will remember this picture. I've used this before. So it's a way of visualizing in a project that took place in Amsterdam how the inhabitants of Amsterdam move about the city, and while they are doing this, they develop their own mental picture of the city, and this of course can be different for every person in general. And the red hotspots here are the most frequently visited locations. This is what we would call activity space in our model.
Does it include tourists?
Pardon me?
Does it include tourists, the mental maps? Or is it just...
Tourists?
Yes, is it mental maps of just the people in Amsterdam, or does it include tourists?
This I don't know. The web page didn't tell us.
I think that may be the Rembrandt house there.
Ah, okay.
It are not tourists. It's people that are associated with the art academy that has volunteered this project. So most of them are inhabitants of Amsterdam.
Right.
Thanks for helping me out. So now what do we need in principle to develop a computational model for this? Well, we need an abstract data structure for representing the physical environment and also the subjective environment as perceived by the individual agents. And of course, we would like to do this in one uniform representation. And then we need a way of describing the behavior of persons as they move about this environment. So for the representation of the environment, we distinguish between the objective environment and the subjective environment. The objective environment is the physical reality as is, the urban surrounding. And this is what we call geographic environment. Then for the subjective environment, the subjective reality as perceived by the individual agents, we further distinguish awareness space and then as part of the awareness space, the activity space, referring to the most frequently visited locations. So, intuitively, it seems clear that an adequate form of representing such an environment is some graph structure where one basically takes information given in the form of maps, or what we actually do here in our model is using information from a graphical information system database, and produce such a graph which comes, such a graph structure which comes with an embedding in the plane, because we have the geographical coordinates associated with vertices, we have distances, we have other static attributes like road types and speed limits, but we also have dynamically changing attributes like traffic density, which change at runtime depending on the time of the day and other possible factors. And in order to have a proper, well-defined basis, so we use, of course, graph theory here, starting from a simple directed graph which represents the topological aspects, and then attach attributes to this graph H here, which gives us the geographic environment representing the objective view, and then based on this we extend this further, adding more attributes which we call an attributed directed graph with colored attributes, where each attribute color refers to an individual agent representing those aspects that are subjective, that reflect the subjective view, the perception of this agent of this geographic environment. So we can express all these aspects in one somewhat more complex graph structure. But this is a uniform representation which can also be used to represent not only street networks, but also other kinds of transportation systems. It could be used to represent an underground station, or it could be used to represent a mall environment, an airport, whatsoever. So it's much more flexible than our current use here. We then compute awareness space, activity space, and crime occurrence space based on this graph structure as a result of performing simulation runs, where activity space, for instance, for a given agent A, is the set of all edges such that the density, which indicates the frequency of visits of this agent of the given edge, is above a certain threshold for the activity space, which is, of course, a parameter in the system that one can change. Now, with this representation, we think we have a good uniform representation that's both robust and scalable. In fact, meanwhile, we can represent by transferring data from a GIS system directly mapping data from a GIS system directly into our graph structure for, say, the entire BC street network. So complexity indeed is not an issue. So far, we have described the environment. Now, how to describe the behavior? And there we use a fairly well established and widely accepted approach, the so-called BDI model, where BDI stands for beliefs, desires, and intentions, which seems to be the most common model for social simulation. In our case, we represent each of the each individual agent in terms of this agent architecture, where we are interested in two aspects. How do the spatial attributes evolve over a simulation run, and how does the agent make choices about going for targets? So there are two main modules right now in the current system. The most elaborated one is this here, the space evolution module. Conceptually, we have two types of rules, cognition rules and action rules. Action rules, for instance, describe really how the agent is moved from one vertex, where vertices represent typically intersections, to a next one. How this leads to update the attributes that are the basis for computing the activity space. And cognition rules, for instance, represent personal preferences of agents for taking a specific route, preferring a specific direction over another one. This all is represented in a working memory of the agents, similar for the target selection. And what comes out then is that we, for each agent, using this architecture, compute the awareness space and the activity space. That's what we are actually interested in. Okay. Now another way of this is the so to speak the top level architecture, how we look at agents. And if we now look into the architecture, then we see that each of the persons is actually represented by a collection of four agents. One is called the master agent, and then we have three subordinate agents, one for each of the modules. And I think I forgot to mention that there was a third module, the agent decision module. In the current version, this is not very well established right now. This is why this is indicated here like this. So these four agents are actually running concurrently, and the decision to have concurrent agents, as a collection of four concurrent agents representing one individual person, was not so much because we think that these things happen concurrently. I think indeed there is some overlap. But it's more for design robustness, because with such a design you can easily change things. They are widely independent. What's going on in this space evolution module is widely independent of what's going on in the target selection module. So this gives us a way of changing the model over and over, trying to improve it. And most of the changes will be local. Do not affect other parts of the model. Now, what the space evolution module then basically does is going from one location S to a destination D, it does the path planning. And to do this, we combine two approaches. One is model-based reasoning, and the other one is case-based reasoning. Model-based reasoning means intuitively that one would look up the how to get from A to B in a map, and this is what we do by using shortest path algorithms. On the other hand, if you know already how to get there because you have been there before, then you would not look it up. So this is case-based reasoning. Now then there are more subtle cases when you know, yeah, I know how to get close, but then you need to combine the two approaches, and there are many variations of this. And the hope is, of course, that by trying to make this more sophisticated, the past planning, one can actually approximate the behavior of humans in the real world, how they really do their past planning. And at any vertex on the path, a new decision is made how to continue the path, or whether one should prefer based on local attributes like traffic density, another path over this one, so one can revise decisions anytime. And of course, it's not meant to reflect the behavior of a particular person, but it's to reflect on average that this behavior comes close enough to what one can observe in the real world. So in the simulation model, this is the interface, the graphical user interface of the first version that we had. This looks quite simple. It's more sophisticated in the current version. What you see here is downtown Vancouver, including Stanley Park. Half of this is gone. You may have heard about this after the storm. Now you can zoom into this. Look at all the locations in the simulation. You also see for each of the agents, here is one such guy, the current location, street names, and coordinates. You may have different types of targets. In this picture here, we have locations where you have high rates of auto theft. And by traversing this graph, the activity space for this agent is then computed and can be evaluated afterwards. So an interesting question when building such models is, how can we actually check the validity of our models? And it's clear that's quite a challenge to do this in general. But taking into account that we have a descriptive rather than a prescriptive use of such a modeling approach, it's more that we are interested in aspects like extracting behavior characteristics from response patterns, generating and testing hypotheses, identifying system boundaries. That's actually quite a challenge to make decisions about what should I take into my model, what can I leave out, what can I ignore, and understanding effect of changes, causality. There are many more aspects one may consider. Another way of validating such a model would be to look at each individual component, like the path planning, and then try to compositionally validate the model by validating the components first, and then making sure that the way they are aggregated is done properly. That's another alternative. And finally, one can just try to apply the models to past data and see whether they can reproduce some meaningful results on the past data. But overall, I think it's not so important. The most important thing is not the ultimate outcome, the model that one has, but the on the way developing such a model, one will gain a much, much better, more thorough, and more precise understanding of the problem, and come across many aspects that otherwise may go unnoticed and will be easily overlooked. So just by modeling using a systematic and formal framework, one significantly can improve the way one understands a problem. And this may be the actual most valuable benefit here. This is the architecture of the simulation model. I mentioned that we extract information from a GIS system and feed it into our simulation system in the form of this graph structure. On the other hand, one would like to extract information, profile information about the persons, also from database systems. This is currently not yet implemented, but in principle, this is possible as well. And is something we may want to do in the future. If somebody is interested in seeing this simulation system in action, then Mona will be glad to show this offline during one of the next breaks. And it's running on a small laptop, so don't expect to see hundreds of agents. With a few, it still works. I just, to wrap up, would like to mention, just to, in contrast, that we use the same modeling approach also in other contexts, like modeling security, in screening of passengers and baggages at, and baggage at airports. I guess from the presentation I gave at the ECHA conference, some of you will remember this work. So I don't spend much time on this here. But maybe just another context. This is about another project we have together with the Department of National Defense Research and Development Canada, where we model distributed information fusion and dynamic resource management for decision support. This is in the context of large area surveillance, where you have a variety of different sensors and sensor platforms, which all have to be coordinated in such a way that you can automatically extract meaningful data. I mean, they produce tons of data, so nobody can, no human can look anymore at this. And you have to have automatic systems that turn this data into more meaningful information that at higher level then indicate that something is going on. So this could be used in a search and rescue operation, but it could also be used for anti-terror applications whatsoever. Such a system is huge. It's, I mean, just such a frigate has, I think, 80 different sensor types that can be configured in various different ways, and the complexity is just huge. So abstraction in this context is absolutely necessary. It's absolutely vital to produce a meaningful high-level model that one can overlook and systematically analyze. To summarize, we are using abstract state machines as an approach to computational criminology for modeling and simulation of crime patterns, and in particular with the understanding that it's desirable to develop tools for experimental research and evidence-based policy making. We are combining two approaches, the multi-agent system modeling approach, with which we underlie with the ASM computation model to have a reliable semantic foundation. Results we have so far is an abstract behavior model of persons and an abstract data structure for representing the environment. We understand our platform not as the final outcome, but as something that provides a platform for further experiments and further development of other kinds of model, and we are meanwhile also looking into, in the context of other projects, into using these platforms for quite different things. My last slide, some final remarks on abstract state machines, which I consider as an intuitive formalization of the notion of algorithm in a really broad sense. It's a practical instrument for analyzing and reasoning about semantic properties, and in particular allows to produce specifications which are executable in principle. Executable in principle means, well, if you have a really abstract description of something where you leave many things just abstract, you cannot reasonably hope that this would run on a machine, because the machine just doesn't know how to compute things. So, and well, in addition, yeah, we use it as a, we consider it a cornerstone in computer science education, because teaching this to our student means that they learn problem solving rather than programming, which I personally find is very important. Looking at interdisciplinary research going on at Simon Fraser University, we have this computational criminology initiative, which is a very nice collaboration between the ICURS lab and computing science and some other departments at Simon Fraser University, together with the RCMPE division. There is another big group at the Center for Interdisciplinary Research in the Mathematical and Computational Sciences at IRMAX. There are various groups doing modeling of in computational criminology, but also of the criminal justice systems, of in health related research, like waiting lists for hips and knees, joints replacement, surgery things. So it's a very exciting environment where many people from very different backgrounds come together and talk to each other. And I think this spirit of multidisciplinary work is really fascinating, at least to me. Thank you very much.